Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip. Ah, wait, that's been done. Well, novelist Tom Carson has done it again, differently. Mr. Carson has written a novel that's provoked an awful lot of comment. It's kind of unreeling of pop cultural history with high art. The castaways of a 60s sitcom rub up in history against the likes of Jack Kennedy, Roy Cohn, and J. Robert Oppenheimer. The book has been compared disadvantageously to Finnegan's Wake. But then what isn't? It's also being called the best comic novel of the season. Tom Carson, who's also a critic for Esquire magazine, joins us. His new book is Gilligan's Wake. And thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And I just do not know how to begin to describe this. I mean, the easy way to say is to say you take these characters one by one and give them have them inhabit an alternate universe.
I wanted to write a sort of unconventional personal history of what we used to call the American century, and I decided to do it by inventing autobiographies for the future Gilligan's Island castaways, or my fantasy versions of them anyway.
I mean, let's explain some of them, for example, just arbitrarily, the skipper. Skipper turns out to be a man with an interesting personal history.
Well, it seemed obvious to me that in his younger years, the skipper would have first encountered the South Pacific in the PT boats during World War II, whose other skippers included both McHale from McHale's Navy and the young John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
And, of course, they also encounter young Lieutenant Commander Richard Nixon.
Let me, without further ado, get you to read a short section of the book.
This is from the opening chapter, which is a very jangled stream of consciousness, told by a narrator who keeps insisting that he's Maynard G. Krebs, the character played by Bob Denver on the sitcom Dobie Gillis before he was on Gilligan's Island. So he's trapped in what he calls the loony bin. This is just a bit of his description of it. Believe me, most mornings it comes as a relief to learn I'm awake. When dawn wells up in the sky, she knots me together. Then we'd sit around the cleaver ward in our robes and gowns, waiting our turn to be led down to breakfast and wondering why our ward had the name it did. The one across from us was called the Burt Ward, and every schizo in it wore a mask and hopped around like batty robins.
Just in that short paragraph, you have their invocations of, and I hate to speak of them as if they're classical citations, but invocations, of course, of Gilligan's Island, Dawn Wells, who starred as Marianne, Leave It to Beaver, Ward Cleaver Bean, Beaver's father, portrayed by Hugh Beaumont, and then Burt Ward, who played Robin on Batman and Robin.
Especially in this first chapter, those references and allusions do tend to get crammed in at breakneck speed because this narrator is also going to turn out to be the one who's inventing, ventriloquizing everybody else's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so by having him present himself as a lunatic in an insane asylum and tossing in all this TV surrealism, I was trying to suggest this kind of jangled, bombarded consciousness that would produce these fantasies about the Gilligan's Island characters.
The character portrayed by Russell Johnson, the professor. The professor turns out to be even smarter than he seemed on that island.
Considerably smarter, yes. Among his many other nefarious conspiracies, you find out that he was actually responsible for rigging the castaway's whole situation, and it was one of the scientific experiments he was conducting on behalf of Roy Cohn and the sinister cabal that in that chapter is revealed as actually running American life.
Perhaps we should pick up the narrative thread of Ginger. Not surprisingly, Ginger falls in with bad company of high note. By that I mean Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., the Rat Pack.
One of the things I loved about writing this book was how quickly things fell into place. And as soon as I started thinking about Ginger, I realized that she was the perfect vehicle to take me everywhere I wanted to go in the first off the Hollywood lowlife of the 50s, and also the heyday of the Rat Pack, and from there you make the connection to JFK again, who also shows up in that chapter as a Playboy senator and
yes,
friend of Frank and Sammy's. I mean, in general, I really felt that more than anything, this book was about the women characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, Marianne and Ginger are both much more intelligent and perceptive than I think someone coming at the book casually would normally expect them to be.
Marianne, I can't believe I'm phrasing the question this way, but she turns out in many ways to be the moral and intellectual center of the story.
Oh, yeah.
Is there some sort of message in that a character who, I guess a lot of young adolescent men probably carried the torch for, but who was kind of discounted in many ways as a character by her very niceness, turns out to have these dimensions in your world?
I did start out thinking of her as nice, but limited.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized that started to bore me pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And I thought, no, I want her to be observant and perceptive and to have this sort of flinty, laconic, Midwestern astuteness mm-hmm. about what's going on.
I wonder if you've heard from any of the people involved.
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm. I mean, the irony is I never had any special attachment to the sitcom. In fact, kind of the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
But when the idea for this book came to me, I realized part of the appeal was that even if you were never a fan of the show, like it or not, you don't have any choice in the matter. Those seven stereotypical cartoons are just branded on your brain, no matter what. And that was why it made sense to me mm-hmm. to treat them as archetypal figures, because they do play that role for mm-hmm. us collectively, even if we do it mockingly.
Mr. Carson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Novelist Tom Carson, who's also a critic for Esquire magazine, his new novel is Gilligan's Wake. Just sit right back in your hair and tell that's a fateful trip.